we're going to sing another hymn in just a minute, hymn number 245. As I look at this group this evening, and it's this way each time we're together, really we're looking at a gifted group of people. And as Dean has already told us, God has gifted you with gifts from himself and then placed you in the body right where it pleased him so that his purpose can be fulfilled. And the challenge is, what do we do with those gifts? I had to think of that hymn that we sometimes sing that says that we've been freely given many things, and now we're to share that, to allow it to flow back from the Lord through us to others. This evening I want to think about, really it ties in, you and I have been given great love from the Father. And so this evening I want to think about love as being really probably the most prominent distinguishing characteristic of a believer. Love. And our Father has shown us that love, and he intends for us then to exhibit it, to allow it to flow out to bless others as well. Let's sing this hymn before we go too far. Hymn number 245. And again, I'll line just the first verse. I chose it really for this verse and the last verse, because it's not just that our God is love, but it's also then that that is to show in our lives so that the unbelieving world can see the testimony of the God that we serve. Our God is love, and all his saints, his image bear below, the heart with love to God inspired, with love to man will glow. Love as a distinguishing mark of a believer. And so this evening, and we're going to look at various scriptures, we'll spend some time in the writings of John, this disciple or this apostle of love. But really what I want to think of is the fact that believers are identified by their love, then they should be motivated by love, and finally controlled or ruled by love. Believers are identified by their love. And so if I had a theme verse, really, it would be in the Gospel of John, chapter 13, verse 35. We're thinking of believers being identified by love, and that makes sense because Jesus said that that's the way it was supposed to be. John chapter 13, verse 35, as he spoke to his disciples there in the upper room, he said, "It's by this that all men will know that you are my disciples, if ye have love one to another." Jesus was saying that they will know you're my disciples as they observe your love. That is going to clearly identify you as belonging to me. That's what you and I should be known for. More than anything else, we should be known for our love. And I would hope that as people look, as they observe our lives, as they see how we interact with each other, that that's what would stand out to them, that those people love each other. But I have to admit that there are times that if I think about how I've reacted in a situation or how I've interacted with somebody, maybe that's not as clear or as evident as what I know that it should be. You see, love in our lives reflects our Master, who is defined as love. Look at what John says in 1 John chapter 4. There's several verses there. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7. "Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knows God. He that loves not knows not God," and here he says it, "for God is love." And then go over to verse 16. "And we have known and believed the love that God hath to us. God is love. And he that dwelleth in love dwelleth in God, and God in him." Believers are identified by their love, and it is that love that reflects our Master, who is known as a God of love. And yes, we know that he's a lot more than that, because the world that we live in would want to say that that's all he is. And so they forget about his justice. They forget about his holiness. But the God that we serve is love, and we are to reflect that to the world around us. I think about when Jesus says that they'll know that you're my disciples by your love. And I like to think of that as a badge, really. You know, if you were going to a function somewhere, maybe you go to a conference, and they give you a name badge. And sometimes it even gives an association, you know, you're there because you're with this group or whatever it is. That's your badge. Can you see that as Jesus is speaking to his disciples, he's saying, that's going to be the badge that you wear that makes it so evident that you belong to Jesus. It's the love that we have for each other that is motivated by our love for him. Love is an undeniable evidence of the Lord's work in our lives. All of us are still living in the flesh. And in the flesh, it's not possible to have the type of love that the Scripture teaches towards other people. But it's only by him working in our lives, this one who was the example of love, this one who showed love even in the midst of being mistreated, it's an undeniable evidence of his work in our lives. A clear sign, as John says here in 1 John chapter 2, it's a clear sign of living in the light. He that saith he is in the light and hates his brother, verse 9, is in darkness even until now. He that loves his brother abides in the light, and there is none occasion of stumbling in him. So the apostle is saying that if you have love for your brother, that is evidence that you are walking in the light, because that's the only way that it's possible. It's also a proof of spiritual life. Again, in 1 John, the third chapter, over in verse 14, he says in the beginning of that verse, we know, he's speaking of assurance. So do you ever find yourself wondering, is the Spirit working in my life? Well, a proof of that is the love that you have for your brothers. Verse 14, we know that we have passed from death unto life, because we love the brethren. He that loves not his brother abides in death. So the apostle is saying that we can know with assurance that the Spirit is dwelling within us and that he is working in our lives as we have that love that pours out to those around us. Identified by our love. Do you know that's how the early church was known? Here in this district, we're going through the book of Acts. And you know, I'm not sure where you are in your study, those in our congregation, but we can see very quickly that those believers, as they came to the Lord and then after Pentecost, and it says they had all things in common. And they were making sure that there was nobody that was left out. They were caring for each other. You get the picture that they spent lots of time together. It says that they broke bread house to house. And you can read some of the history, and it will speak of them and people that looked on, and some of the historical writers would say, look at how they love each other. In fact, one of the things that they would talk about is how those folks would even lay down their lives for their brothers. They loved each other that much that they were willing to die for a brother. And guess what? The same call is for us today as well. If you look at 1 John still in the third chapter, verse 16, hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. So those early Christians, that was one of the things that stood out to people as they were facing persecution. And there were even instances, and I don't know, we may hear some of that as we hear the martyr's narrative here in a few weeks. Instances where one brother would actually go in the place of another to the stake because they loved each other that much. Or put themselves in harm's way when they could have run, and they may have been safe, but they put themselves in harm's way because of their love and their care and their connection with each other. We're called to the same thing as well, that we would be identified by our love. Love should be evidenced in everything that we do. Everything that we do, and Paul speaks of that in Ephesians chapter 4. He says that even when we speak the truth, we're to speak the truth in love. And there are times that that means that we have to say hard things to each other. And yet, we do that in love. Everything we do, in love. Over in Hebrews chapter 12, we're told that, is that right? Hebrews 12, yes, verses 6 and 7. This God that we serve, who is a God of love, who cares so much about us, and yet even in those times where there is need for discipline or chastisement in our lives, look at what he says, verse 6, for whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every man whom he receives. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Lord chastens not? So we speak the truth in love as parents. When we discipline our children, we're to discipline them in love. And that means even as a body, when there are times that you need to speak to me to bring me up short or to show me something that I'm missing, we do that in love as well. Because that's the example of the God that we serve. Now I want to think just a little bit, kind of like we have with some of the other marks or distinctive marks of a believer. Think of some of the things that are a hindrance to that in this culture that we live in. And it's the same with this love of the Lord or brotherly love flowing through our lives. As Americans, we're pretty self-sufficient. Not too much that we can't take care of, we think, on our own. And so as a result of that, we tend to at times be kind of private and maybe even become a little bit proud. I've kind of got this handled. And I think what that can do is it doesn't open us up very much to each other, to where maybe there are times that I kind of draw inward. And if I feel like I've kind of got everything handled, then I just assume you do too. And I'm not as connected. Maybe not as sensitive to your needs as what I could be. I think that can make us slow to love. Maybe not quite as open with that as what that early church would have been. And we just kind of hold things to ourselves. So that's one potential hindrance to us exhibiting the love in the way that God would intend us to. Another is the fact that human nature and our culture that we live in has so grossly counterfeited what love is that maybe we tend to pull back a little bit. In fact, we live in a culture that has diminished true love and instead is really attributing all kinds of sin to love. I think it was just last week in the news. You probably saw it. One of the major, I think it's the second largest Protestant group in the world, that there was a vote in their conference, and there was a real uproar as a result of that. What came out of that vote was that their conference determined that they were going to stand firm on their historical position of not accepting homosexuality and not ordaining clergy who were practicing homosexuals. So this is an example of the culture that we live in and how that can tend to impact us. There's this huge uproar because many in their own conference were saying how unloving, how close-minded, and when will we finally get with the times? So you see, we can then end up being painted into that same box and be told that we are unloving because we are going to instead stand on what the Bible defines as truth and pure love instead of what man has now twisted it to be. Our culture can impact us. Another hindrance is just the reality that agape love, as outlined in Scripture, is really not something that comes naturally. A self-sacrificing, pouring out for the good of someone else is not something that comes naturally, but instead it is something that is spiritual. And then lastly, in too many cases, the church, the professing church at large, is no longer known for its love. While in the early church, in Acts, people were looking on and they were saying, look how they love each other. Unfortunately, in professing Christendom today, worldwide, that's not as true as what the Word would have it to be. Because instead, there ends up being more of a focus on self and political correctness and watching out for our own needs rather than the needs of those right within the body or outside as well. Sometimes the church is not as loving as what it could be. I had lunch with a gentleman this past week who is a member in the larger body that we would have been, our forefathers would have been part of many years ago. And as we were chatting, I asked him what he'd been doing. He's a retired man, and he says, well, he says, I spend all my time watching the news. And I told him, well, that doesn't sound very encouraging. No, he says, it's not. In fact, he says, I don't think I'm going to have any peace until, and he gave some prominent politician's name, until that person's in jail. Now, here's somebody who is part, and he had just before that been telling me about how excited he was about being involved in some humanitarian efforts where he actually was exhibiting what it means to love and to give of yourself to others. And yet look at that confusion. Now he is so wrapped up in the unrest of the world that he's not going to have any peace until somebody else is brought to justice. Not a very clear picture of the love that the Lord intends to be exhibited by his church. So believers are identified by their love. And then secondly, believers should be motivated by love. And I thought about that a little bit. I'd like you to think about it. What is it that motivates us? We're going to go out these doors in a little bit, and we're going to face busy weeks. We all know what our responsibilities are. What is it that really motivates us? Is it getting those things checked off the list, staying on schedule, being productive? You know, the world that we live in has lots of false motivations. There are people who are motivated by popularity, motivated by success, motivated by prestige, motivated by acceptance. This gentleman that I had lunch with sounds like he's motivated by justice. What is it that motivates us? And so as we think about that, and obviously we're leading up to the fact that we should be motivated by love, let's think about what it was that motivated our master, this one who we are to reflect while we're here. So what was it that motivated Jesus when he was here? I like that question. We sometimes say, well, what would Jesus do in this situation? So really I'm saying now, what motivated Jesus? And you think about it, why would Jesus reach out to a Samaritan woman of all people sitting by a well? You can read it in John chapter 4. I mean, this was a Samaritan hated by the Jews. And he had a purpose. He was going somewhere. I'm guessing he had a schedule. He was waiting for his disciples to come back. Not only a Samaritan, but this was a woman. And you can read the surprise in her own inquiry when she says, how is it that you, a Jew, are asking something of me, a Samaritan woman? Well, I think that we know, because we know his character, that Jesus was motivated to visit with that woman, to connect with her, because of his love for her. Because he saw her not as a despised Samaritan, not as a woman who was less than a man, but instead as a precious part of his creation that he had been sent or had come to reach. Jesus was motivated by his love for her. Or how about in John chapter 8? Why bother with a woman who had just been caught in adultery? Think about Jesus' motivation. Of all times, that might have been the time that many of us in our humanity would have thought, yeah, this is a good time for me to make an escape. We've got a guilty party, self-righteous crowd surrounding, and the law is very clear. So what motivated Jesus to stay, and not just stay, but to speak? It was his love. But not just for that woman. Wasn't it also his love for all of those self-righteous people standing around that circle? And when he looked at them and he said, whichever is without sin, you cast the first stone. Jesus could see their hearts. He knew how desperately they needed to see their own hearts. He knew this woman's story. And he knew how desperately she needed cleansing. And he didn't water it down. He didn't tell her that she was better than what she was. But instead, he told her that he wouldn't condemn her either. And now go and sin no more. Jesus was motivated by his love. What caused Christ to go to Bethany after Lazarus died? John chapter 11. Lazarus is already dead. And you can read in that chapter, in the eyes of his, or the perception of his disciples, he was choosing to go on a suicide mission. I think it was Thomas that says, after Jesus says, we're going to go up to Lazarus, to see, to Bethany, where Lazarus was. And Thomas says, oh, let's go with him so that we can die also. Thomas was having a hard time understanding, what is the motivation for this? So what was Jesus' motivation? Well, I think we see it in that chapter later, when the people who were standing by, and Jesus is there at the grave weeping, and they say, behold how he loved him. Jesus was motivated not only by his love for Lazarus and Mary and Martha, but also those disciples and everybody else that was there that needed to see that he truly was the life. Why did he go to the cross? We know that we needed him to go there because of our sin. This master who we are to exhibit, to share, not to hang on to the gift that he has given us, but to share it with us or others, this master was motivated by his love for all the world. He says himself in John chapter 3, verse 16, it was because of his love for all the world that he was willing to go to the cross and offer himself for our sins so that we might live. What motivates you and me? If we are going to exhibit as believers and display who it is that we follow, we are to be then motivated by love like he was. Ours is to be a self-sacrificing, serving love. That was the example of Jesus. It didn't matter how they mistreated him. It didn't matter what the dangers were. He still was about his Father's business and willing to give and sacrifice. So then when I consider my own self, the measure really of my love is how much I'm willing to sacrifice, whether it's my time. Maybe it's just my opinion that sometimes we hang on to very tightly. And as we interact with each other, and if we're going to be close to each other, there will be times that we will have to sacrifice those opinions so that we can actually learn from one another. Or is it possible that sometimes our love for each other is displaced, maybe kind of squeezed out, by our love for the things of the world here? Look at 1 John again, chapter 2, in verse 15, where the apostle, he warns, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that does the will of God abides forever. So maybe there are times that in the same way that other things can motivate us and they can displace that motivation of love, some of these other loves can get in there and squeeze out our love for each other so that it doesn't have the full impact that it should. There's a couple of biblical examples as I think about brotherly love and caring for each other and spending and being spent because of our love for each other. One of them is in Mark chapter 2, and it's that paralytic man who had friends that cared enough for him, and I picture them being motivated by their love for that person, and they took his bed and they took him to the source. They cared enough that they wanted to take that man to where he could be healed. And the scripture says that they got there and there was no way to get in. But they didn't let that stop them. They were so motivated that they went to the top of the house and they made a hole to get him down through. What an example of being motivated by love and not letting anything get in the way. There's another one, a negative example in John chapter 5. This is the story of the man by the pool of Bethesda. And you remember that the apostles were there, and this was a pool where sometimes the water would be troubled, and if you got in there quick enough, there was miraculous healing. And this man was asked why he didn't get in, and he says, I have no man to help me. And so then I ask myself, as I think about how I interact with others, which friend am I like? Where was this man's friend that would have been motivated to take him so that he could be made whole or care for him? And you compare that to those in Mark chapter 2. I think each of us, those are the kind of friends that we want. Those are the kind of friends that we want to be, that will go above and beyond so that we can help one another. Do you ever feel like you've loved yourself out? You know, this thing of loving each other, there are times, that would probably be an example there in Mark chapter 2. I would imagine that those men thought, you know, I went about as far as I think I need to. You ever feel like you've loved yourself out? I've done what I could for this individual. I've tried to help. They don't seem to want it. And maybe we start to back away. Well, as we think about that, aren't you glad? I think all of us are glad that our Savior never gets loved out. And many of us, I'm speaking for myself, have given him every reason to. Whether it's our stubbornness, we don't get it, or we don't respond in the way that he would want us to. So the challenge is that we would keep on loving regardless of the response of others. Still thinking of love motivating, love motivates brethren to come alongside and carry the burdens of another. And I want you to notice, go back if you would to John chapter 13. I want you to notice the wording there where Jesus says, they will know that you're my disciples if you have love one to another. Here's what I'm thinking of. It's a lot more than us just saying the words. You know, it's fairly easy to say, I love you, and then not show it. What Jesus is saying here is that biblical love, and he patterned it, is an action. You see, he says you have love one to another. It's not just love for each other, but it's a love that takes action. And this biblical love that we are called to is to be one of action. It's that love that motivates brethren then to come alongside, to put their arm around somebody, to help carry a burden that is there. It's an active word. And we have many opportunities to show that love by our actions on a regular basis. We've heard several times today that the body that we're part of here, that's a picture that's used throughout Scripture of the church, and it's a comparative to our physical body. Many members of one body. And so as we think about that then, in our love taking action, we know, and the word would say that, when one member suffers, all the body feels the pain. And if we're going to be motivated by love, that means that if I know that you're hurting, that should hurt me too. Enough that I let you know that I care. This body, the church, should be a place where we bear each other's burdens and we care for each other and we sympathize together. It's when we're struggling or burdened or facing something large that we really then recognize our need for each other. And I think there are times that we forget that. I know that I can. Maybe we don't admit our need for each other as frequently as we should. But I'll tell you what, when you talk to somebody who doesn't know what this is like, when you talk to somebody who is trying to go through life on their own and they're facing those challenges and they have no clue what to do next, then you recognize what a tremendous blessing it is to have a body, a family of faith that can bear each other's burdens and help each other. We're to be motivated by love. There's a story, I'm thinking, of bearing each other's burdens and the body coming alongside and filling those gaps. I like the story of a couple of young boys in an orphanage. One was blind and one was crippled. And so the blind boy, he could get around well, but he kept banging into things. And the crippled boy, he would love to get around, but his legs wouldn't work, but he could see just great. And so in a true picture of bearing one another's burdens, that crippled boy, he would get up on the back of the blind boy, hang on to him, and he was the eyes and the other one was the feet, and they got along just fine. That's a picture of us in the body. You have gifts that I don't have. And I need you and those gifts to help me get through life so that you can see the things that maybe I'm blindly missing. But as we're motivated by love to help each other, we then can press on in faith and fulfill the purpose that he has for us here. Identified by love, motivated by love, and then believers are to be controlled or ruled by love. So in the same way, or it's actually the opposite picture, to be motivated is to be pressed into action. And so the love in our hearts should do that. But isn't it true then that there will be other times that because of his love in our hearts, that will have a restraining influence? Those are the times that maybe I'm not going to respond just the way something would have naturally come out, because the love that's there is going to hold me back. We're to be controlled or ruled by love. Look at Romans chapter 13. In verse 8, the apostle says, "Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loves another has fulfilled the law. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet, and if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love works no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law." The apostle was saying that really, love is the fulfillment of the law. It's our responsibility. And he's saying that there in the 10th verse, love works no ill. Love is going to restrain us from doing anything that would hurt somebody else. Jesus had said, I think it was to one of the scribes in Mark chapter 12, who had asked him of the greatest commandments, and he said, "Love God and love man. There is no other commandment greater than these." Jesus said that all the commandments are wrapped up in that. And you think about it. Everything else, if we will purpose to love God, and then if we will love our fellow man, everything else will just fit into place. Love your neighbor. Your neighbor is different than mine. You will be connected with people this coming week that I may not even see. But you know what? As you love them, and you love them as yourself, then I have all confidence that you will say the right thing, you will treat them the way the Lord would treat them, and your light will shine to that individual. As we think about being controlled by love, think about it. If our words and our actions, if everything, if we kind of did a love analysis on it, I've got this situation that's presenting itself, and I'm going to have to respond, either in action or through words. Now, what would be the loving thing to do in that situation? So it's kind of like, what would Jesus do? And you think about it, if the words that I'm about to say, are they going to come from a heart of love? Or is it possible that my heart's a little bit fired up right now? And if that's the case, you know, I probably better just sit on that for a little bit. Remember, we're to be controlled by love. And if love is not what's controlling at that instant, then I should probably be quiet a little longer. In Colossians chapter 3, I'm thinking of love. Well, let's look at Colossians chapter 3, verse 12. Paul says, "Put on therefore as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another, and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye. And above all these things, put on charity," or love, "which is the bond of perfectness." I think Paul is saying that, you know, you go through that list of all these other graces that we are to exhibit. Mercies, kindness, humbleness. And it's love that is the completion of that. If we will allow love to rule and have control, all those other things will be exhibited in our life. Now let's read, obviously if we're going to think about love, we need to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And I want to read just several verses there. Beginning at verse 4. I should have printed this off in one of the other versions. I'm going to read it with love. It says charity. Beginning at verse 4, "Love suffers long and is kind. Again, think about you and I, our responsibility to allow love to rule our life, to be really the control system in how we interact. Love suffers long and is kind. Love envies not. Love vaunts not itself, is not puffed up, does not behave itself unseemly, seeks not her own, is not easily provoked, thinks no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Some of the translations would say that love never ends. So obviously the responsibility is that we never stop loving. But I think it would be true to say also that love is never the wrong thing. So it's not going to fail in being the wrong thing. We are to exhibit that and allow it to control our lives in the way we interact with others. I don't know if this would be completely accurate, but think about it. I think that there are other graces that may be able to be faked for a time. So, you know, take mercy. You know, maybe I can fake it for a time that, yeah, I'm kind of a merciful person. Or humility. I don't think that you can fake love. It becomes evident pretty quick if it's a false love, if there's no basis to it. And then as I think about that, it's also something that you don't have to spend a lot of time telling somebody about. And I'm not suggesting that we don't tell each other that we love them. But I have noticed there are people that I can think of who their care for people is just so evident. And I don't even hear them telling me how much they care about people. But as I observe the fruit in their life, and I see how they interact, it is so evident that they have that love for others. And I think that that should be the goal for each one of us. I want to look at Galatians chapter 5. So still, as we think about being controlled by love, and we know that it's the Spirit, ultimately, that is to have control of each of our lives. And so here in Galatians chapter 5, as Paul gives these characteristics of the Spirit in the life of a believer, I want to read just those two verses. The fruit of the Spirit is love. So now love's at the top of the list here. Joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. I came across, it's been some time ago, it was D.L. Moody that took these characteristics that would be evidenced in the life of a believer, that is the outpouring of the Spirit working through our lives, and then he took each of those and redefined them as a element of love. Really what he was saying is it will be love in our lives that shows itself in each one of those. So as an example, where the apostle here says joy. The fruit of the Spirit is love and then joy. And Moody said that joy is love exalted. And so you think about that as we, in our lives, as we exalt the Lord because of our love for Him, and then as we build each other up, that is joy that ends up being displayed to the world around us. Joy is love exalted, or peace is love resting. You see, we're thinking about being controlled by love, and so is there any greater peace in any of our hearts than the love of God that is at rest in Him? Remember, the the master said, come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. That is the peace that we have as believers because of his love in our hearts. Long suffering is love enduring. We read that in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Love is patient. It suffers long. We're to have enduring love as we interact with each other and those around us. Keeps no records. It's not based on circumstances. It just endures. Gentleness is love in society. We're going to go out to the culture tomorrow. The apostle said in Philippians chapter 4, that we're to let our moderation, some translations would say gentleness, be known unto all men. So as we go out this next week, may that be true in our lives, that our gentleness is known unto all men. That's love being exhibited in society. Goodness is love in action. Remember, it's more than a feeling. It's more than just words. But it's letting that feeling and that motivation now take action and bless others as well. Goodness. Faith is love on the battlefield. We heard this morning, four young souls who now have entered the battle. Our faith grows on the battlefield. And that faith that is a result of the Spirit in our lives can be solid and can grow because of his love in our hearts and our confidence in knowing that he loves and cares for us. Meekness is like love in school, willing to put self aside and still be instructed. To be meek is not having all the answers, but being teachable, approachable, and able to learn what the Lord will teach us from his word and even from others. Temperance is love in training. Temperance speaks of self-control, being sober-minded, and it's really the result of loving others more than ourselves. To be temperate is to keep myself in check and love others more than ourselves. I want to think just of some practical examples then of love on display in our day. We're called to show love here and outside of here. And so what are some practical examples of that? Well, one would be helping others even when it doesn't suit. You know what that's like. You've got a busy schedule and all of a sudden the phone rings and there's somebody with a need. That's one of the blessings of this body, the body of believers, is that it doesn't matter what other things there are to do, when there's a need all of a sudden, because we're motivated by our love for each other, you folks show that time and again. You stop what you're doing and you respond in love. Or how about words or notes of encouragement? Sometimes it's just an encouraging word. I know that I'm blessed when it's somebody that shares something that they thought would be encouraging to you, or maybe you go out to the mailbox and there's a card in the mail. So we've received those kinds of things. We then have the opportunity, and many of you do that, to be able to encourage. That's a way of exhibiting love for others, that you would lift them up. How about caring enough about each other to go to the hard places and to talk when there are differences? We heard a very complete explanation this morning of what we've all agreed to do in Matthew 18. Isn't that an example of putting our love into action? Because it's really, it has to be love in our hearts for somebody else that would motivate us to be that vulnerable, that uncomfortable, to go and sit down and talk. But I would agree with Vince, as he said earlier today, I don't know how many times it works, but I know it works. And what a blessing that we have that opportunity as we work together to love each other enough, to care enough, that we will go and then that we will receive when there is those times that things need to be talked about. Another practical example of love on display is discipleship. I'm encouraged when I hear of groups of young brethren who are getting together, studying the Word, encouraging each other. Or when I see older people who are connecting with younger ones. I think I had heard recently of some of you sisters that were doing that. Discipleship. That's a practical example of living out our love right here where He has placed us. And remember that challenge that we were given earlier today. Not to just be comfortable sitting by the fire, but instead being willing to be uncomfortable when necessary so that we can go out. And those groups, as you do that, as you have people teaching other people, learning from the Word together, obviously the chain that's intended is just like Mylon told us this morning, where there was that relay of the antidote. It was handed off to the next person who was to take it on to the next person. And that should be what happens right here. As we teach others, who will teach others, who will teach others. So let's continue to nurture and to build up so that together we can grow in our faith. So as we conclude, our Father, this God who we serve, has lavished upon each one of us immeasurable love. He sent His Son, who He so loved, and He sent Him here because He loves all of us. We then, as His believers, are to exhibit those marks to the world around us. And so I trust that each of us would purpose that we would, as His children, be identified by love. So that as we go out these doors tonight into the world, that people will look and they will see us as His servants by the love that is exhibited by your lives. So we will be identified by love. And then let's purpose together that we will continue to allow that love to motivate us to action. Not willing to just kind of sit by and let somebody else take care of it, but instead move to action because of that love. And then that we would be daily controlled. Not flying off at the handle, not responding just how anybody else would, but controlled by that love within our hearts to maybe hold back, rethink how we were going to respond, and make sure that the way we do respond matches the way that He would want us to. Because Jesus says that it's by this that all men will know that you are My disciples, if you have love one to another.